This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. In 2012, Michigan became the 24th state in the nation to adopt a so-called right-to-work law. It prohibits closed shops where workers are required to pay union dues. Mother Jones magazine recently examined how reluctant Republican lawmakers signed on to the legislation and the funding behind that effort. Andy Kroll wrote the story for Mother Jones magazine called Meet the New Kochs, the DeVos Klan's Plan to Defund the Left. Andy Kroll, thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
And we should note for our audience, who may remember the name, you are from this area and a Portage Central High School graduate. So good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's a real treat to be talking with you, Gordon, and folks in my old stomping grounds, being able to listen in.
So could right to work have happened in Michigan without someone like Dick DeVos being able to provide the funding and lead the charge?
I don't see how that could be possible. As I sketch out in this story, right to work, you know, it was a pipe dream in the state of Michigan for decades, and it was always sort of this unattainable and frankly crazy notion, because Michigan is a very heavily unionized state compared to most of the rest of the country, cradle of the modern labor movement, the state that brought us the UAW. And so this idea was just sort of kicking around, and it was on a conservative wish list, if you will. But when you got Dick DeVos and his family, you know, this includes his very politically savvy wife, Betsy DeVos, he used to run the state Republican Party, and other family members. When he comes onto the scene and some of his allies in the mid-2000s and really starts thinking about how to potentially make this a reality and really starting to fundraise and talk about putting serious money behind it, this notion of right to work in Michigan goes from being crazy and a pipe dream to being something that actually had a chance. Still a long shot. Until the week or two before the bill passed. But I don't think without Dick DeVos and him, his money, his family's money, and his sort of political network would we be having this conversation.
But after Dick DeVos lost his bid for governor in 2006, he had some polling information from Bill McInturff, a regular contributor to NPR, as a matter of fact. Often provides polling results there. And among the things they found was that there would be some pretty widespread support for a right-to-work law in Michigan. But they didn't jump on this right away. The timeline's kind of interesting. Were they sitting back waiting for the right moment, or was there a process going on in those intervening years?
Both. They get Bill McInturff to conduct this poll, and the numbers come back, and they seem to be favorable to an effort like right to work. And the key folks here, you know, Dick DeVos is one of them. I'd also note that former Ambassador Ron Weiser, who lives in Ann Arbor, major Republican fundraiser and operative, was also a big player as well. And I mentioned Ambassador Weiser in the piece. So the poll comes back, and they're intrigued. And so what they do is meet with a fellow named Frank Keating, who is now a big banking lobbyist in D.C. But Keating was the last Republican governor at the time. This is 2007, 2008. He was the last Republican governor at the time to pass a right-to-work bill in his state. And what he told Dick DeVos and Ron Weiser was that, you know, doing this via a ballot proposition, like so many of the ballot propositions you've seen in Michigan lately, was not a wise idea. And Keating told them that as a former Republican governor who presided over a right-to-work bill, you really want to have the legislature be a Republican, and you really want a Republican governor, because if you don't have a Republican governor, you have that veto there. So he gave them this piece of advice. You need to bide your time, and you need to basically take back the legislature entirely. And so they set about doing that. Ron Weiser, with Dick's help, becomes the head of the state Republican Party. and you know they invest money in the Mackinac Center, you know, a free market think tank that supports right to work, and then they start slowly building the groundwork and biding their time, you know, looking for the right moment. So it's a combination of those two things.
And was the right moment when some union activists getting a little nervous about the calls for right to work amongst perhaps a small but rather vocal number of state lawmakers decided to gather petition signatures and put a proposal on the ballot that more or less would guarantee collective bargaining rights in the Michigan Constitution? Was that the opening they were waiting for?
Yeah, that's what they say. That's what Dick DeVos and Ron Weiser and their political operatives say. You know, there's really a chicken and egg situation here about what was the impetus for pushing right to work in the 2012 lame duck session, that little window of legislative activity between the November 2012 elections, you know, when the legislature changed over in January 2013. If you talk to DeVos and Weiser and those folks, they will say that Prop 2 going on the ballot was sort of the impetus, yes, for them to say, okay, this is the year we're going to do this. If you talk to Bob King at the UAW, you talk to the folks at the Michigan AFL-CIO, the MEA, and so forth, they believe that right to work was already on its way. They believed it was coming. They heard members of the legislature talking about it. They heard about Ron Weiser going around talking to people, you know, sharing this polling data that you and I just discussed and you know, sort of planting the seeds of, hey, the right to work could happen. So the unions believed there was right to work was a foregone conclusion and that they, as they put it to me, needed to launch a preemptive strike, which they believe Prop 2 had it passed would have been. It would have preemptively sort of outlawed a right to work bill. And of course, they failed. But there is a chicken and egg situation there because, you know, the unions say this thing was happening anyway. We need to get out ahead of it. And the conservative folks say, well, they did Prop 2, and then we decided to move. So it's hard to know which one is actually the case. I just, you know, report both. But that's a slightly murky part of this whole narrative.
But your reporting also shows that the unions didn't necessarily believe that the defeat of Prop 2 was going to lead directly to right to work, and they had assurances from many Republican lawmakers that it was a fight they weren't interested in. Governor Snyder was still saying at that time that it was not on his agenda. So what happened between Election Day 2012 and that day in December when Governor Rick Snyder signs that bill into law?
That window of time, maybe a six-week window, that's even less than that, it's a month-long window, is just an absolute frenzy of lobbying and discussions between the unions and the legislature and the governor's office and everything back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. There is a fascinating series of meetings between labor leaders in the state and representatives of the governor and representatives of the legislature furiously trying to work out a deal to take right to work off the table. And so you have concessions being offered. You have the Snyder administration putting forward ideas as if to say, well, if you labor folks and if you legislature would agree with these ideas, maybe we'll take right to work off the table. You know, a couple of those, these ideas didn't make it into my piece, but I found very interesting. Some of the ideas the Snyder administration put forward were changing selection of state Supreme Court judges from an election to an appointment process was one idea put out there. Abolishing the State Board of Education was another idea put out there, as was essentially gutting the State Civil Service Commission. So there are these big ideas being put out on the table, and the talks fell apart. The labor folks, the governor's representatives, the legislative leaders, the Senate majority leader, state House speaker, they couldn't reach an agreement. And despite the assurances from some Republicans to the labor folks, this isn't right to work, it's not going to happen, it's too extreme. And just like that, the talks are over in late November, early December, in fact. And process of putting the right to work bills out and voting on them and passing them is just fast-tracked. And before labor knows it, the bills have been passed in December, and Governor Snyder signs them on December 11th.
And your reporting also shows there were many Republican lawmakers who felt some serious pressure, even some Republican lawmakers who had decent ties with union members, who felt some real pressure to sign on to this legislation. What sort of things does it seem were held over their head?
I had lawmakers talk to me about receiving phone calls from Dick DeVos or Dick DeVos's associates, definitely calls from former Ambassador Ron Weiser, a lot of lobbying going on by those folks, lawmaker telling me that he received essentially an implicit threat that if he didn't vote yes, he would be primaried. He would face a well-funded primary challenger when he runs for re-election, a Republican primary challenger. And so, lawmakers, they felt the heat. They felt pressure to get on board. They realized that the folks on the conservative side who wanted this, the DeVos's, the Weisers, were sitting on top of a lot of money, and they could make their lives really miserable if they didn't. I also report in the story, the Senate Majority Leader Randy Richardville feeling a lot of heat from wealthy donors who wanted this to happen, who wanted right to work to happen. He tells a union leader with the Carpenters Union that quote, "They've got my caucus. You can't imagine the pressure I'm under around right to work." And so, this was in that, both slightly before the November 2012 election, but especially in that lame duck window. The lawmakers felt the heat. Republican lawmakers felt the heat, especially the ones who were on the fence or maybe didn't support it. They were under a lot of pressure from some very well-financed people and organizations.
Now, the supporters of right to work in Michigan might defend the actions here and say, look, we had a poll that showed widespread support for the law. It was tough to get done any other way. This is how we saw the path that we could get it done. We were just trying to do something that most of the voters in the state would support anyway. Is there something to the idea that this is how the political process almost had to work if you were going to get a right to work bill through?
Yeah, I think the DeVos's and Ron Weiser and their allies in the legislature would absolutely make that point, that they would say, we did the polling, we put together basically a political campaign with, and there was an entity financed partly by the DeVos's called the Michigan Freedom Fund, I believe was the name, and to run ads and to put out mailers and to write talking points and so in a way, yeah, this was a classic political campaign, and they believed that they needed to act in the lame duck because they had the momentum, and that the unions tried to do their own effort with Prop 2, and it was defeated, and they if that wasn't a mandate for the conservative side, it was at least a very large sign that the voters of the state did not support that, and very possibly supported right to work on the other side. And so, yeah, I don't think the DeVos's and their allies saw this as like some kind of coup or surprise attack or something like that. I think they believed the wind was in their sails and they needed to strike while they could, needed to move while they could. And that's exactly what they did.
So is passing a right to work law in Michigan then seen as a blueprint for something that could be done in other states, perhaps many other states?
Yeah, well, Michigan is the 24th state to be right to work. So there are 26 more to go, or 26 more options. But yeah, it absolutely is. After the bill was signed by Governor Snyder on December 11th, 2012, Dick DeVos kind of went on the road a little bit, as did some of the members of the legislature who were the biggest boosters of Right to Work. Dick DeVos gave a speech at the Heritage Foundation in early 2013, essentially laying out how they did it. It was very interesting because usually large donors like Dick DeVos don't step into the limelight and talk about, you know, how they did this. They prefer to operate in the background and let the results speak for themselves. But Dick DeVos went to Heritage here, the Heritage Foundation here in D.C., a major conservative think tank, and laid out just how they did it, and with an eye toward instructing other folks how they could do it too. Later that fall, Dick DeVos spoke at in September of 13, a conference of the State Policy Network, which is sort of an umbrella group for conservative think tanks around the country, basically Mackinac centers in other states. This is the umbrella group for the Mackinac Center and its ilk around the country. And, you know, his line was, if we can do it in Michigan, you can do it anywhere. And he gave, you know, another version of the speech explaining how they pulled it off in Michigan. And then, this actually didn't make it into my story because I didn't realize this had happened, but a newsletter published by the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, as it's known, the sort of bill mill for the conservative side, put out a newsletter titled, You Can Too! Exclamation point. And one of the sections of ALEC's You Can Too! Newsletter was Michigan's Right to Work effort. And Dick DeVos featured very prominently in that section of the newsletter. And so, I mean, it's very clear that the Michigan model is potentially being exported to other non-right-to-work states where folks can try to, you put this into action. You know, State Senator Patrick Kolbeck, a Republican in Michigan, said he talked to folks in Illinois, Missouri, and New Hampshire, to name three states, about right-to-work and how Michigan pulled it off and how they could too. So, yeah, it's absolutely an effort possibly being replicated elsewhere.
Does that make the 2014 election perhaps a moment of validation for Right to Work? And could the opponents perhaps see it as a chance to repudiate what happened in Michigan with Right to Work?
Very good question. You would think that 2014 would be the year that the labor movement in Michigan would either try to put something on the ballot to repeal Right to Work, possibly put Right to Work front and center in its messaging around the campaign and around trying to defeat lawmakers and the Republican lawmakers in the legislature. Labor has been conspicuously quiet on what their plans are for 2014. You know, I spoke with basically every labor leader in the state for this story and really couldn't get a straight answer about what their plans were. Granted, I was talking to them in 2013, the fall of 2013, but they were very tight-lipped. I will say that one very prominent labor leader told me, you know, we're not sure exactly what our strategy is yet, but I will assure you that that law will not stand. We will do whatever we have to repeal it. So the will is there. It's the question is, what are they going to do? I mean, did they try to just focus on the legislature, flip the legislature, and then try to put some kind of bill in the works to undermine Right to Work that way? Maybe. That's a really tough road to hoe. And with the way Michigan has been redistricted, there are not that many competitive seats. So they've got their work cut off. I mean, obviously they're gun-shy about a ballot proposition after the failure of Proposition 2 in 12. So I'm not sure how it's going to factor into this election year, but I would be shocked if it didn't in some way.
I want to go back to something that's in the headline of your article. The DeVos clan's plan to defund the left. How does defunding the left work into all this?
The labor movement obviously dislikes Right to Work because they believe it allows workers you know, in a unionized workplace, essentially to what they call freeload or free ride. They don't pay dues, but they can still benefit from, you know, a union negotiating a contract and that kind of stuff. Essentially, right to work, it's been shown in other states, bleeds the labor unions of their dues, of member dues, which is the lifeblood of their organization. It's their funding, it's how they pay for their programs, it's how they, in many ways, if the workers approve this, pay for politics. And so in states where right to work has passed and been in place for a while, you really see labor union participation drop, which means funding drops. And what that has to do with the left is that, you know, the unions for a very long time have been a pillar of support for democratic politics at the local level, at the state level, at the national level. It's still true today. You see labor unions, you know, at the national level, lending grassroots muscle to democratic politics, donating to political committees. Labor unions are a huge source of support for political parties, for progressives and democratic political parties. And if you bleed the unions of their dues, you essentially start to defund democratic politics and progressive politics. And this is a real threat for the left, if you will, and which is, you know, why they see right-to-work laws as toxic.
The beginning of that headline is Meet the New Kochs. And as you tell us, the DeVosses, the Koch family, the Coors family, these are among the founding families of the modern conservative movement. I'm wondering how the DeVosses stack up nationally in terms of how well known they are. I mean, obviously, the DeVosses are very well known in Michigan, especially this side of the state. Are they as well known as the Kochs? Are they seen as influential? And did this right-to-work bill in Michigan perhaps elevate their clout amongst conservative circles nationally?
It really did, Gordon. In conservative circles, the DeVosses are, I mean, they're pretty well known, at least among the donor class, if you will. Dick DeVos's father, Rich, co-founder of Amway with Jay Van Andel, he has been a loyal donor to conservative causes and Christian right causes for decades. And he, you know, and his wife attend Charles and David Koch's biannual donor conferences, if you will, these big events that we hear about where, you know, conservative and libertarian millionaires and billionaires get together and decide, you know, where to put their money and that kind of stuff. So the DeVosses are sort of known in those circles. And as I note in the piece, too, since the 1970s, the DeVos family has put some $200 million into these kinds of causes. But that being said, I do think that the right-to-work victory for the DeVosses and all of the subsequent press and attention that they've gotten has elevated their profile. And I do think that they are now, if they weren't before, you know, they're definitely becoming household names, not just for Amway, but for their political and issue activism. And they are up there with the Kochs or the Bradleys, the Coorses, and so forth. Maybe, you know, the name doesn't roll off the tongue like those other ones, but I do think that all the activity in the conservative world, you know, has brought them a new amount of attention, and their national profile has been raised.
Andy Kroll, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
Andy Kroll is a reporter for Mother Jones Magazine. His article on passing right to work in Michigan is called Meet the New Kochs, the DeVos Klan's Plan to Defund the Left. This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.